This is KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. My name is Colin Marshall. You're tuned in to Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent on KCSB 91.9. The track you're hearing right now is Wood Lead Rubber from Agent Ribbons. They're playing the Mercury Lounge on Sunday, May 1st. That is one of the many tracks you will hear today, organized by the pop culture editor of The Indie, Allie Cumming-Gore. Thanks to her, as always, for the tunes. Now, today we're talking about two important subjects. Later on the show, we have a segment about hoarding, but first on the show, we have something that I would say touches more lives, but maybe we can talk about in a little more lighthearted way. Last time Shannon Kelly was on the program, we discussed how she was working on a book with her mother, Barbara, about the choices women face today, I think is the best way to put it. Now the book is out, as you may have seen already, by the new issue of the Santa Barbara Independent. Or rather, I shouldn't say out, about to come out, but available, I believe. I'm going to look at this Roy Lichtenstein-type cover on the front just so I can tell you, you know, how cool it really is. I would recommend you take a look at that. But the cover story is What's a Woman to Do? So Many Choices, So Much Angst, featuring segments from, and I want to get the title exactly right, so I'm looking at it in the article, Undecided, How to Ditch the Endless Quest for Perfect and Find the Career and Life That's Right for You. Shannon, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now, first, to get a basic idea of what the book is, for those who didn't hear the first time you talked about it on the show, what's the main question you want to answer in this book, or try to answer, or just grapple with?
Well, I'd say that women today have all of these options that it's very new for the women of today. Our mothers never had these options. They fought to get these options, but now that we have them, there's sort of this feeling of, oh my God, what do? I have every option in the world available to me, but how do I deal with them?
Now, there is a theme in the article that women are, how to put it, they're presented with the idea that they can have it all. What is it all?
I would say it all is, you know, maybe motherhood, maybe a career. I don't know. That's an interesting question.
That's part of the whole issue,
yeah,
I guess, is what it all is.
You know, and I think maybe in the 70s and 80s, there was this idea of like the corporate raider who, you know, was sexy and brought home the bacon
Wall
and fried
Street.
It up in a pan. And today it's even more than that, I think. It's, you know, you're like the organic mom and you're sexy and you do yoga and you're doing work that's, you know, meaningful and you're living your truth. And there's like, you know, this huge thing. And it's not just that women can do anything. It's that women can do everything.
Now, I hear the organic food, I hear the yoga, and that just seems a very Santa Barbaran topic. This is something you see a lot locally as well,
totally.
As all around, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, as a non-woman, I hear women's conversations about how, you know, we got told we could have it all. We got all these messages that we could combine all these different lives essentially into one. But, you know, I never really was able to identify where are the sources that women are getting these messages from, I guess, in the first place. Who's telling them, don't worry, you can do everything at the same time?
I think I'd say the media has quite a bit to do with it, but I think it kind of comes from everywhere. And, you know, a lot of us, we get it from our moms or our, you know, just the culture in which we're raised, our teachers, whatever. And, you know, it's, as I've said, like, it's a new thing. And so, you know, they may be saying, yeah, you can have it all. But they may not have the experience to, you know, say, yeah, you can have it all. But if you, you know, are married and you want to be moving to, you know, some random town for your job, you better be prepared to have, you know, a couple of weeks of intense discussions with your husband about doing it. Or if you want to get an advanced degree while you have kids, you better be prepared for it to take three times as long as it's supposed to.
Now, some of the excerpts in the article from the book, you have women who I assume are written about under pseudonyms.
Yes.
But where did you find these case studies? Who, I guess I can't really ask literally who are they because, you know,
no.
They're pseudonymous. But who, what type of, how are they connected to you? How did you find or how did you How did you understand that these were the people you needed to include as examples of exactly what you were talking about in Undecided?
Well, I will tell you, anytime I talked about the book at all, people would be like, oh my God, that's me. And so it wasn't hard. And also my mom is a professor. And so she has her students. She has former students that she stays in touch with. And then we have a blog. And a lot of the people, you know, we didn't know. They just would leave comments on our blogs. And we started, you know, communicating with them that way. And then also through some kind of journalist source finding resources.
Right. Exactly. Certainly, I can see combining the journalistic skills you no doubt have developed finding people, and with if your mom is working as a professor, that alone gives you more. I mean, you had to have how many times more women than you actually needed as samples for this book? The crowd must
absolutely.
Be huge.
Absolutely.
Did you ever combine them into composites, like using you had 5 or 6 women that really exemplified something you're talking about, so you made them into one person? Books often do it.
Yeah, they do, but we really didn't. I'll say, you know, we both, and my mom being a professor of journalism, that sort of thing kind of gets her hackles up. So yeah, we didn't really do any of that. And honestly, we didn't change, like the only details we changed are, you know, very specific, like names, where people are from,
right.
You know, because journalists, there's a little bit of an ethical gray area, I suppose.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Now, you knew the questions you wanted to deal with about how, what kind of messages women are getting about what they can do in life, how they're responding, how they're dealing with that. But when you're actually, when you went to meet these women, to talk more about their lives, to learn more about, you know, what they were doing, what they wanted to do, what the gap was between those two, what did you learn that widened or maybe made better or worse your ideas about what the condition of women and their undecidedness is today? I mean, you had to get a lot of information from these people, and some of it must have been surprising.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Some of it was surprising. But, you know, it was really just funny because just, you know, one question and it was like the floodgates would just open. And this was just something that, you know, issues big and small, it just really seems every woman was, you know, dealing with it on some level or another. And whether it was women, you know, my mom's age or women, you know, in their 20s, everybody seemed to pick up something from what we were saying and relate to it. And then just, you know, here's how this affects me.
And was it all of the form that these women would say, like, oh, I want to do X, but I also want to do Y, you know, I want to have a family, but I also want to travel all the time. Were they always problems that could be put into that sort of incompatible desire form, if you know what I mean? Was it all like that?
No, there's definitely some of that, but it's also, a lot of it has to do, like with millennials in particular. This is a generation that was raised in a very, like, kid-centric time, very
right.
programmed and very much, you know, expected to be the best. There's the stereotypical, you know, the trophies just for showing up kind of a thing. And,
yes.
You know, and then they get out of college where their, you know, life is not so programmed anymore. And they're just flailing. They have no idea what to do with themselves. And then, you know, there's women, yeah, trying to, you know, deal with options that are totally at odds. But then there's also, you know, women wondering, you know, doing this or doing that, but feeling like they haven't been able to find their one thing that is their true calling, and wondering about the road not traveled.
Some of it seems to be just an issue of not necessarily doing what you want, but determining what you want, right? Figuring
yeah.
out what you're, I mean, that sounds like at the same time, the most natural yet the most difficult part of all this. I mean, it is, how have these struggles been resolved? I mean, have they been resolved in any of the cases? People finding out, you know, being confused about what it is they do want and how do they find it?
Yeah, you know, not everybody, but some of the people that we did follow throughout the course of working on the book really did kind of have interesting breakthroughs, I guess. And one of the things that is kind of a universal is accepting that, you know, you're never going to be able to have it all. Having it all is, you know, it's a myth. It's just, you know, it's physically impossible. And if you want to talk about it in reductionist terms, I guess, you know, in economics, it's called opportunity cost. If you're doing right. A, you cannot be doing B. If I'm sitting here in a radio studio talking to you, I'm not going for a run.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, there's, and that's, I think something that you realize with experience in life and kind of as you grow up. But I think that's one of the major takeaways for sure.
One of the fascinating things as well, you know, I was thinking about when reading the article, I was thinking this problem of determining what your desires are and figuring out how to balance them with all the other ones you have. You know, it's not just, it seems to be distinctly a women's problem framed here, you know, in the ways that women face certain choices different from men, but it seems like men also have the same problem now that I really think hard about it. You know, you talk about the millennials, and I think about all the articles people send around about, you know, the sort of Judd Apatow comedy style men
today
that have extended adolescence or what have you. And it seems like both sides are more indecisive than they have been before. I mean, it certainly can't help the women that you talk to, for example, that the men are not much more decisive than they are, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, what you're saying right there makes me think of a couple of things. One is absolutely, you know, there has been, there was a huge story in the New York Times not too long ago about emerging adulthood, which there was a social scientist who's literally trying to get that established as like its own distinct life stage.
Oh, yeah,
and that's, you know, universal. It's men and it's women. But I think for women, the difference is that this is new. You know, women have not always had, you know, the options to live their lives any way that they want. You know, it was. I mean, in the 70s, want ads were segregated by gender,
right.
You know, so it's a new phenomenon, and we don't have generations of, you know, role models to look to for guidance. Like, how are we supposed to, you know, handle all of this, to get married or not to get married, to have kids or not to have kids, to, you know, have a career or not to have a career, to have some combination of those things that hasn't always really been options.
It seems like one way to interpret this sort of development in feminism is that, you know, earlier maybe you could frame it as saying women getting toward the state of doing everything that men do. But now it's sort of like, tell me if I'm correct on this, but the question is more like, well, we could do everything that men do, but that's not so appealing. Maybe we want to make our own thing that isn't the old school way of being a woman, that isn't emulating men, but then, you know, kind of, what is it?
Totally. And I think, you know, when women first came into the workforce, the strategy was absolutely, you know, blend in, play like a man, look like a man, you know, wear shoulder pads.
Right.
I mean, that was the thing. And I think you're absolutely right. Like right now, a large part of the dissatisfaction is like, well, that's not very satisfying. You know, who wants to do that? And, yeah, and I think corporate structures are still built around the idea of the employee is someone who has a full-time spouse at home to take care of, you know, life and the house and the kids. And regardless of whether that's a man or a woman, nobody's life really looks like that anymore. So I think kind of a new frontier is reimagining those structures entirely.
By the way, if you've just tuned in, this is Poodle Radio from KCSB and the Santa Barbara Independent, the official, well, I shouldn't say official because that's somehow against the rules, but the show of the Santa Barbara Independent on KCSB 91.9 FM. I'm speaking with Shannon Kelly, who is the co-author with her mother, Barbara, of Undecided. It's subtitled How to Ditch the Endless Quest for Perfect and Find the Career and Life That's Right for You. Brand new. We discussed it last time she was on, but now it's a book you can actually get. And I want to follow up on the last thing you said, which is like rebuilding this or reinventing the structures of life. You know, before people tended to have models in that this is the track, or maybe track is a better word. You know, this is the track I can get on. If I'm a woman, I do this. If I'm a man, I do this. And then I'm all set. And it seems like there's an equal chance when you have to find your own way, make your own track for life. It seems like you have about an equal chance of being more satisfied or less satisfied than what came before. Is that a good way to put it? Like, it's all up to you. You could roll the dice, and you could roll what's good in dice? Lucky seven, or you could roll snake eyes. You know what I mean?
yeah, absolutely. I think you know, that's one of our main points. Like, this is uncharted territory, and we're all kind of, you know, running blind.
I want to get a sense of some of the creative ways that the women you've talked to for the book have handled it too. I mean, what's impressed you strategy-wise as far as how they have invented their own lives, how they have figured out a way to do something different than anybody who came before?
Well, I think the most impressive things are the women who have, you know, who have really decided to just do what feels right to them. And, you know, that sounds easy. That sounds like a bumper sticker or something, but it's not. You know, it's really, you know, one of the women we talked to, she, you know, had talked about how all of her friends from college had advanced degrees. They're like, you know, doctors, lawyers, MFAs, PhD candidates. And she was pregnant with her first daughter when we first started speaking to her, and she was, you know, she was talking about how she was more conflicted about leaving work to raise kids than her mom would have been, her mom who was a teacher, because that's the kind of career where you can maybe opt out for a little while and then come back in, and it's not going to mess with it too much. And then she was saying, but, you know, I'm conflicted about leaving my kids in daycare 40 hours a week. So what's the answer? And one of the things that she said, which I love, is, you know, I just love women who decide there's some career or some part of womanhood, whether it be career or motherhood or, you know, marriage, whatever. They just decide, I don't care about that. You know, they're able to kind of give up the ghost on that.
Do they have to cast just one thing off and then the rest can fit in? Or is this a case of saying, I've got to pick what's the main thing, the main one thing I want in life, and everything else gets, I'm going to have to spend a little less time on it all because of this one goal? Is it a matter more of cutting one thing out or making one thing prime?
I don't know that I would put it that way. I think that what it really has to do with is you have to accept the fact that everything, you know, everything in life is a trade-off. And so, you know, once you really accept that and you really grasp it, and then you go into your choices a little more consciously and you say, you know, okay, if I want to have this sort, if I want to have, you know, a full steam ahead type career, then I have to, you know, I'm not going to be the, you know, the mom who's at home every day doing, you know, finger painting and baking cookies. And, you know, that can sound like blasphemy, but it's, you know, it's a physical impossibility. And so you've got to, you know, I think if you just go into your choices consciously, then, you know, it's a little less upsetting when you're, you know, running around trying to do everything, be all things to all people.
One of the most striking things in the article with the book excerpts is that it mentions a woman who, I guess, walks by a store window or something and sees a poster with what she calls three women who are happy on it. And she says to herself, they must all have kids. And she's going into agonies about that. And then she says, I don't even want kids.
Yeah.
And so what's going on with that? I think I will say this, as a man, I have a hard time understanding something like that when a woman says, I don't want kids, but wait, I'm going to cry because I see a photo of a woman and I think she has kids because she's happy. What's going on there? Help us understand that.
Well, I think it has to do with sort of this idea of what womanhood is and what your life will entail, and sort of, you know, there's another excerpt actually in there. A psychologist said to us that every choice, you know, we focus on what we choose, but we tend to leave out, you know, the part about what we're choosing to leave behind.
Right.
And, you know, there's with every choice, there's a little bit of a loss there, and not knowing how to grieve a loss and not consciously, you know, saying to yourself, okay, you know, because I mean, this is something that most women are raised with, like you are going to grow up and you're going to have kids. And I think, you know, so for Chloe, who is in that story, who you're talking about there, you know, maybe it was just, you know, she had sort of decided that, but she had never really taken a moment to, you know, be sad for these, you know, these faux children that you know, were always sort of assumed, but weren't actually going to happen.
Right. It's a matter of directly acknowledging, I guess, both the elements of your choices, both what they bring and what they preclude. Then it's just, you have to think about it clearly and not just motor on trying to ignore the things that you've chosen to deprioritize.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now with the book being released, I would imagine you're already getting the kind of feedback that you got when you said you were working on it, that women are saying, hey, I see myself in this too. You know, people will probably be asking you, are you going to write a sequel to this? Because I have these same problems. Write about me too. You know, do you foresee that? I mean, I can imagine just a lot of feedback coming that's people saying, wow, you should have put me in here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I guess I'm undecided about that. Maybe.
Maybe. We'll see. Maybe. Where can listeners find out more about Undecided?
Well, you can go to my blog, which is undecidedthebook.wordpress.com. We also have a Facebook page and a Twitter account. That's Undecided Book is the Twitter. And then the book's available on Amazon.
And I guess since you have a blog and a Twitter account, what ways are you moving forward with this? I mean, there's publicity to be done, of course, but it sounds like you're going to be keeping in touch with the readers of this book, and you're going to be providing some kind of updates on what, I guess?
Well, you know, the blog is fun, and the blog provided us with, honestly, a lot of fodder for the book. And so we're continuing to do that and continue the conversation that way. And it's also, it's a nice, kind of a fun thing about the blogs and the Twitter and stuff is communicating directly with people that are reading it.
It's kind of like an actual conversation then that just keeps going and going and going.
So yeah.
As long as you want it to.
Yeah, exactly.
I've been speaking with Shannon Kelly about the book with whom, I'm going to attempt a very complicated sentence, but the book... with her mother, Barbara, whom she is the co-author of, that was completely wrong, Undecided, How to Ditch the Endless Quest for Perfect and Find the Career and Life That's Right for You, subject of the cover story in this week's Santa Barbara Independent. And of course, there's excerpts there and all kinds of cool Roy Lichtenstein type artwork. Shannon, thanks so much for taking the time this morning.
Thank you.
This is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent on KCSB 91.9. My name's Colin Marshall. Going to take a brief musical break, and we'll come back and talk about hoarding. This cut is called Lord Knows Best from Dirty Beaches. Another cut organized by pop culture editor Ali Cumming-Gore. Dirty Beaches are playing in Santa Barbara soon. I'll give you the concert info just right on the other side. Stay tuned. Thank you.
On Saturday, April 30th, KCSB 91.9 FM will be hosting the Spring Conference of the University of California Radio Network, UCRN, a biannual meeting of college-based, non-commercial radio stations from throughout the UC system and beyond. KCSB invites the general public to the UCRN's keynote presentation by Professor Dorothy Kidd of the University of San Francisco's Media Studies Department at 10 a.m. in UCSB's Humanities and Social Sciences Building, room number 1174. In College and Community Radio and Communication Rights, Kidd will address the urgent and complex challenges being faced by U.S. college and community radio stations due to global changes in technology, broadcast and music industries, and journalism. University stations nationally also face growing competition for their frequencies and increasing demand for both relevance and sustainability from academic and local communities. Kidd's talk will use the framework of the Global Campaign for Communication Rights to examine how stations can best use their media resources to respond to the needs of their listening communities. Again, College and Community Radio and Communication Rights, a keynote address by Professor Dorothy Kidd at the Spring Conference of the UCRN, is scheduled for 10 to 11:20 a.m. in UCSB's HSSB room 1174. This talk is free and open to the public. KCSB would like to thank area sponsors of the Spring 2011 UC Radio Network Conference, which includes Cafe Zoma in Goleta. Go to kcsb.org for more information. By the KKK, police the streets by bloodhounding. Interest on the credit card just keeps on compounding. But the FCC can never shut this pirate sound down. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that
This is KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. My name is Colin Marshall. You're tuned in to Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent here on KCSB. We're in the middle of a brief musical interlude. We're playing some tracks arranged by pop culture editor Ali Cummingore. Before the second segment of the show, I'm going to tell you what we've just heard. That was Shake the Shackles from the Crystal Stilts. Concert data about them. They're playing Muddy Waters Cafe in downtown Santa Barbara on Haley Street on Thursday, May 5th. Before that, we heard Dirty Beaches with Lord Knows Best. What's the information there? Well, that's a good question. I'm looking it up as we speak. I'll give you that in just a moment. Right now, we're going to hear one more song from Rhett Miller. It's Girl. Yes, this is a cover of a very well-known song. He's playing Soho on Thursday, May 5th. Stay tuned. Second segment coming up in just a moment on Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent on KCSB 91.9 FM.
Is there anybody? She's looking good. She acts as if it's understood. She's cool.
KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. My name is Colin Marshall. This is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent on KCSB. We're now into our second segment. Thanks again to Shannon Kelly for showing up talking about her book Undecided for the first segment. And now we turn to an issue you may know about from, as I've come to understand it, you may have learned about from reality television. That's something I want to know more about in a moment, but it's an issue that affects Santa Barbara. With me to talk about it, first up, Jackie Quinn, the Geriatric Care Manager for Senior Planning Services. Jackie, welcome.
Thank you.
And also, we have Santos León, the General Manager from ServiceMaster Anytime. Santos, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, the issue is hoarding, and this is something you might have seen written about on independent.com or in the Independent, because there was an event on April 21st, a panel, or a discussion entitled Collecting, cluttering, and hoarding. And a basic definition of hoarding, I'll throw this one first, Jackie, to you. In the basic, most basic possible terms, what is hoarding?
Well, hoarding goes a step above the collecting, which is things are nice and neat in your home and you collect certain items like Happy Meal toys or something.
Right.
Cluttering is more along the lines that is I could be accused of, where you have piles of paper and different things around your desk or your home and you're comfortable with that. But hoarding is a whole different level and is actually part of the DSM, the Diagnostic Manual now in psychology. And hoarding is where you walk into someone's home and literally beyond comprehension, there are piles of belongings all the way up to the ceiling and many other issues surrounding that.
And tell us a little bit about this discussion on the 21st. What was covered there? And what's besides the nature of hoarding, I mean, where did this go?
Well, I think it was the first of its kind, and Service Master put it together mainly because they're encountering it on a different level than they had before. In prior to recent times, they would be called in maybe if someone had died or was being placed into a facility. But what they're coming across and what we deal with is the more reality of someone still living in their home, and either there's an issue if they're a tenant, that water main or water heater broke or whatever. So the purpose, I think, of the panel was just to sort of educate the public and actually sort of educate each professional who comes at it in a possibly different way, and how we can best make the hoarder safe and make the people who live around them safe.
Now, Santos, tell us about Service Master's experience with hoarding. I mean, is that the type of job Service Master anytime gets called out to, is when a hoarding situation has gone on?
Well, when you say type of job, I mean, we definitely do all sorts of things.
Right.
You know, and the reality is we've probably been cleaning homes that have been defined as hoarding for quite a long time. We just don't really have a name for it.
Oh, really?
A title. Because, I mean, for our situations, you know, in general, we'd be called out because someone had passed away when you had to clear out, you know, a home or whatnot and do it cleaning. And the reality is we'd come into these things where we had to organize and go through a lot of things. With our other divisions, you know, we deal with water damage and fire damage, as she was mentioning earlier. And the reality is that we have to deal with a home that eventually will be livable again for this person. And you can imagine having to pack out a house because there's water damage and it may be a couple of couches in here or there. But when you're dealing with, you know, items that are stacked to the ceiling and or, you know, dealing with trying to go through rooms of items, it kind of creates a little chaotic environment. I mean, we know how to deal with it. It's just that it all of a sudden now throws a caveat that isn't your quite normal situation.
Now, the piece in The Independent on this discussion about hoarding, it starts off saying, this is something that you've seen perhaps on reality TV, but here's the actual reality of it. And I haven't seen the shows that are making hoarding into a known condition. So I mean, what are people seeing on reality TV about hoarding, I guess is what I'll ask first.
Well, you know, again, obviously, in general, media, social media isn't a created environment where you want to see this, what's going on with the person living in it. I mean, the reality is that two things can happen. I mean, one is it's a lifestyle people have created for themselves. Unfortunately, it creates a havoc or a dangerous item. I mean, we've heard stories where people have passed away in a house because no one knew they were there for 2 or 3 months. That's pretty scary. That's a lot of items to be able to be buried into, and almost a term buried alive. I think the show is more about trying, and kind of what the whole point of having the 21st meeting was to create awareness. You know, I mean, the reality is people don't quite know if they're defined as cluttered or hoarding. You know, there's definitely a situation where people that have family members, unfortunately, some family members haven't been visited for quite a long time, and we find out they've been by themselves for quite a long time, or they've been kind of isolated, and it kind of helps. The whole point of community awareness is to say, hey, you know what, just relook at these situations and maybe you didn't think about it before. Mm-hmm. But like we said, you know, it wasn't a terminology that was used a few years back, and now there's a term for it. And by creating awareness, we're hoping that people can maybe reanalyze their situation and realize, you know, maybe I do have a problem. Maybe there is something that has to be addressed, because unfortunately it could create a problem where we had, you know, the fire in Lompoc not too long ago where, you know, they're saying that by definition, if it wasn't a hoarding situation, it may, you know, there's a chance that it would have been better and things like that.
Mm-hmm. I think the show, it's good in the fact that it does bring awareness to the public, but I'm concerned that it, as all reality TV does, it sensationalizes it. And, and at the heart of the issue, and that we want to be mindful of, is here's a person who's deeply troubled. And there is help out there. It is a very slow and long process, which I think the show does portray sometimes. I'm actually kind of more concerned with these clean sweep types of homes where they go in and I'm like, can we go back 4 months later and see what it looks like?
Right. There's a decent chance of relapsing into hoarding or cluttering or whatever they're doing.
Right. And that's what I think the part of the point of this session last week was, what can we do when we know someone's a hoarder, and how do we prevent them from falling back into that pattern? What assistance can we do? And, for example, at Senior Planning Services, we have in-home caregivers, so they're really on the front lines, and they can alert us or family members to what is happening. And we have, care managers who can sort of facilitate the cleanup. We don't necessarily do it. But we have a lot of resources that we can call upon, and one of them is Service Master we work with. So,
now, what is particularly effective, or what have you found is particularly effective in helping these situations get resolved, these hoarding situations?
Boy, it's really difficult, and of course each situation's unique, but I think the most effective tool is to treat the hoarder with respect, and then sometimes you may never get it to the point where you and I or your audience would be satisfied that it was a sparkling, clean home, but the goal is to get it somewhere that it falls within the safety guidelines so that emergency folks can get through, so you don't have the issue that we just had in the Lompoc fire, and that you're not, you know, having an environment that's breeding vermin, et cetera.
Right. Now, for those who don't know about the Lompoc fire, what type of a hoarding situation may that have been, and what was the contribution of that to the scale of the fire or the problems the fire created?
Well, in listening to what the fire department has said in general statements, I mean, the reality is they said they couldn't get to things because they had to go through piles of debris. Without going specifics, to me it just means that, you know, you can imagine a mound of things to get to. The other thing probably is, when you have that amount of debris, or that amount of clutter, I should say, collected, it probably fuels a fire. It probably fueled it even more, that it wouldn't have been as bad. So there's a lot of factors. I'm sure there's key specifics that may have made it happen that way. But just in general, the terminology, the terms used were that because of the amount of items, the response wasn't as effective as it could have been.
And the aisleways were blocked with bookcases, and you're in a mobile home that's narrow to begin with, and so they had difficulty even maneuvering with all the equipment that they have to wear.
When when Service Master is hired to clean out a home that has been in a hoarding situation for a long term, how big a scale a job does that become because of the hoarding? I mean, I want to get a sense of how there's some jobs when you're cleaning out a house, and then there are hoarding jobs. How much greater an operation is that when there's been hoarding?
Well, I think per job creates more variables. I mean, an example of a fire damage, for example, in cleanup, we have to deal with different variables just because of an odor as well as of dirt or soot. You know, so you got the walls and the structure itself, then you have the contents, whether there's clothes, whether there's papers, whether there's furniture. But now when you add, you know, a hoarding situation where there's literally multiple and mounds of items, you know, we have to unfortunately organize that out in a way where, I mean, really we put it back, if we're going to bring it back in an organized fashion. So, you know, you can imagine the mounds. I mean, we've seen homes where you've got newspapers, literally just newspapers on a kitchen table stacked to the ceiling, which in general we would think that's trash. But for someone like this, it's so, you know, we have to organize things. And in water, it's the same thing. You know, we have to move things out. I mean, obviously in the clean out, very simple, it's being out to either be disposed of or to be moved to someone to inventory it and deal with the situation. But I think the key, the keyword inventory, is what creates the big caveat of all of a sudden literally quadrupling the amount of effort it takes to process something like that.
Now, hoarding in Santa Barbara, I want to get a sense of what type of person, what's the pattern? What type of people are hoarders here in Santa Barbara?
Well, my experience, and I'm in no means an expert. I just worked with hoarders, and our company has. But it's usually someone who's been well-educated. They're middle-aged. That statistics say more often it's women, but I've found it to be just about equal. It's someone that you may not think, if you saw them on the street, you would never imagine that they're living in the conditions that they are.
Mm. So it's not something you'd ever guess. It's something you'd have to actually go there and see. And now it seems hard to believe, but it must be true that a hoarder confines, the problem is confined to where they live. They could seem perfectly normal in every other way, but the hoarding is an isolated condition.
It would seem so. I mean, I haven't been to their workplace, so I couldn't say what that looks like either. But if you saw mine, you might be concerned about what my house looks like. So,
well, and as they said, what's the statistics she also mentioned? They also talked about people that are non-socioeconomic or non-social, if anything. They're kind of kept to themselves. They don't really associate with too many people. Unfortunately, you know, it'd be nice if we said, hey, here's a tagline saying that house is a hoarder, because it's obvious.
Right.
But there's some things that may give away. I mean, if you see a yard that's got items stacked or, you know, collected, I should say, you know, that may be a sign. But unfortunately, you know, because it's inside a house, you really don't know. And as she mentioned, some people are educated. I mean, some people you wouldn't even notice. It's just, it's either, in some ways you can say it's a sickness. Other ways it can be. It's just the way they were grown up, maybe. Or I mean, there's I'm sure there's a lot of things on the social end. Or if anything, you know, to give a true definition, an expert could probably give a true analysis of what it is. But
a lot of it is truly psychological, and you can either be heavily depressed or have a little bit of OCD or ADD. So I think people are becoming more aware of it, and maybe these shows have helped bring that out into the open more. But I think as the professionals who come across it, we've all been sort of talking amongst ourselves for a while, and that's why this was such a great program to have, so that we could speak to the landlords or management companies who have clients who are tenants who are hoarders, and how do you deal with it in a respectful manner.
Now, for those listening in, no matter if they're landlords or what they are, if they're aware of somebody who they suspect or fear might be getting into a hoarding sort of pattern, or they fear they might be a hoarder, and they want to do something about that to help, you know, what are the sorts of things they can do? What's within the power of somebody who's external to this hoarding situation to help out?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, they can always contact me and I can refer them to various people, but also Adult Protective Services. I didn't bring their phone number, but, you know, that's an anonymous way to have someone come out and investigate a situation. Also, County Fire or City Fire departments.
And as far as contacting you, was there a site for senior planning services they can go to, a website there that they can get you through? Or?
Yes, it's www.seniorplanningservices.com, or I can give our phone number if that's...
Sure.
It's 805-966-3312. And, you know, we don't necessarily do the cleanup, but we can help facilitate it or match people with the right parties.
And Santos, I know Service Master is often called at the point when, you know, the situation's beyond help. But from your experience, I mean, what do you recommend for people who think they might be seeing a hoarding situation develop?
Oh, well, again, on the opposite, we would definitely recommend people to, if it's a matter of conversation, talking to Adult Protective Services, senior planning, kind of, you know, talking to, if there's a member of the family that they're concerned about, to kind of bring awareness to the family and maybe go to, if it's the fact of needing those services. Fire department's always recommended in general, no matter where you live, just because there's a concern of a fire hazard. You know, I can ask for cleanup against Service Mesh anytime. We're one of many, I'm sure, that does cleaning. Our concern is making sure that we get everyone involved to make sure we know what we're dealing with and how we process it. Because, you know, in some people, it's very emotional for them to deal with their items and or bring their family into something they're not used to. And there's embarrassment. There's all sorts of things that go on. So it's more than just our cleanup, you can imagine. There's a psychological factor. There's a lot of things going on. And we're just trying to make sure that we can facilitate the process to make sure that there's no additional concerns in the future.
I've been speaking with Jackie Quinn, Geriatric Care Manager for Senior Planning Services, and Santos Leon, General Manager at Service Master Anytime. Jackie, Santos, thanks so much for taking the time this morning.
Thank you.
This is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent on KCSB 91.9. I've been Colin Marshall. If you'd like to hear this show again, visit independent.com for the complete archive, and we're going to close things out with one more cut organized by pop culture editor Ali Cummingore. It's the Vivian Girls with Where Do You Run To? They're playing Muddy Waters on Tuesday, May 3rd. I'll hope to have you here listening in next Thursday, 8 until 9. In fact, every Thursday here on KCSB 91.9 FM. And stay tuned, got Question Air on the way.